Hello, and welcome to Clearer Thinking with Spencer Greenberg, the podcast about ideas that matter. I'm Josh Castle, the producer of the podcast, and I'm so glad you've joined us today. In this episode, Spencer speaks with Ovul Cesaire about making a good impression, signaling self-perception, and properly communicating accomplishments.
Ovul, welcome.
Hi, Spencer. Great to join you today.
Great to have you on. So all of us want to make a good impression, right? We at least want certain people to like us, if not everyone to like us. How do we do this? And my first question for you specifically is, if people want to make a good impression, should they brag? Should they talk about the good things they've done? Or is this actually a way to make a bad impression?
This is a great question and something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, just in my daily life even. You know, how do we make a good impression, and how do we get people to like us or to respect us? These are very, very fundamental human needs. If we think about the goal of liking and respect, right, and if we think about all of the relationships in our lives, I would say pretty much these two goals coexist. Yes, we may care about liking in our family and with our friends, and yes, we may care about respect maybe in our workplace, but we still want both of these dimensions. And what I would say to your question is that there is not one single cure, one single answer that I can give you. Oh, we should brag, or we should do this, we should do that. Because the more I study this phenomenon of impression management, how do we actually make a good impression on others, the more I find out that it's actually our intuitions are often misguided. Like what we think works actually doesn't work. So I can give lots of to-dos, like step-by-step guide about what not to do. And regarding how can we make a good impression, that's a more of a balancing act, and we need to go a little deeper. But it's not as simple as just bragging. It's not as simple as just not sharing any bragging attempt. You know, some of us may think, oh, if I'm just don't say anything good about myself and try to be humble, it will all be solved. But no, that's also not the best strategy. So I can give you a guide about what not to do, if it makes sense.
Great. Well, we'll definitely dig into that. The reason I mentioned bragging is I know you've done specifically research on that topic. And it's an interesting phenomena because clearly some people brag because they want attention. They want people to like them. And yet we also often find bragging annoying, right? Like it rubs people the wrong way. We find it obnoxious. And maybe people even would say it's unvirtuous, right? That there's something sort of immoral about it in some cases. So going back to what you were saying a moment ago, what is it that people think works? Like what are people's naive models of how to make a good impression?
Well, I mean, consider someone who has an accomplishment, right? Let's say we receive a good grade on an exam, we get a great new job, we get into a great dream school or something like that. We all have this inherent desire to signal our competence to others. And that makes a lot of sense. We have this strong desire to leave a favorable impression on others, particularly of our competence and great quality. So we would like to share that. So we all know that having success feels great and we want to share it. Yet at the same time, we know that it can put people in a very precarious situation because we want to be perceived as both competent and also warm. Because these are the two dimensions in people perception, in person perception, in social perception. These are the two dimensions that we care about. You know, when we meet someone, we care about whether they can do a good job, they are intelligent, they are capable individuals, competent individuals. That's the dimension of competence. The other is warmth. Do we actually want to hang out with these people? Do we want to invite them to our happy hour? Do we trust them? Do we think they are nice? And what we know is that these two dimensions require distinct communication strategies. And people know this. You know, if I, like, one of the risks of bragging is that if I brag too much, if I self-promote too much, then I may not be perceived as likable because people may think I'm an arrogant person. So that's a correct model that people have. So in a way, yes, we know modesty is a universal value and we care about that. But then there's the other risk. If the success is not communicated, then others may remain unaware of our accomplishments. And in our world where, you know, there is a competition for everything, everyone is trying to share their expertise, everyone is competing for our attention. even a YouTube video that's longer than I don't know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes is, you know, we're not sure if it's going to be watched. So in this world, we also want to make sure we let others know about our accomplishments and competence. But we also know that it's risky. Then people's intuitions start to fail. When people try to get the best of both worlds. Oh, I'm going to brag, but I'm going to also try to be warm about it. I'm going to put a mask on it. And people have all these sophisticated strategies. One of the things that I studied was called, for instance, humble bragging, which I still find fascinating because I see it every day. It's like a curse. That's for instance, a wrong model. One of the examples of wrong models that we have identified in our research so far. Humble bragging, this bragging masked by complaint or humility, where people actually think it's going to get them the best of both worlds. You know, I'm going to brag, but I'm going to also remain humble and be warm. But that's actually not how it looks to perceivers and observers. People actually feel quite annoyed by humble braggers. And I can give examples of humble bragging behavior too.
Yeah, so humble bragging is such an interesting concept because with social media, we see this all the time where people want to brag about something, but they know they're not really supposed to. So they're trying to find some way to brag about it that comes across as not bragging. So could you give us some kind of realistic examples of people doing this?
Sure, of course. Every day is an example of humble bragging. I don't know if it's going to happen to you too, Spencer, but the moment I started even being interested in this project and in this phenomenon, I started seeing humble brags everywhere, not just social media, everywhere. Some examples that I remember from our social media Twitter studies were people say stuff like, oh, why do people hit on me when I'm in my sweatpants? Or I guess in academia, it happens a lot. You know, I'm so exhausted from all the interview requests I get after publishing this paper.
Oh, man, that's so funny. So is the idea that you're trying to sort of signal something slightly negative but embedded in a brag so that it doesn't come across as a brag? Or how would you like break down what exactly a humble brag is?
Sure. So we defined it as bragging masked by complaint or false humility because it comes in two forms. One is exactly like you said. People say something negative, but it's embedded in a brag. Like it's the complaint-based humble brag. So things like, oh, I'm so exhausted from signing these autographs. I guess a celebrity may say that. The other is like more false humility. It's more about the lack of belief in any of the success that you get. Oh, I cannot believe I won this teaching award again. So surprising, I will be at BBC or CNN for an interview today. Something like that. So it comes in two forms. And yeah, people actually really do think that it would both impress the other side and would elicit some sympathy. So it would speak to both warmth and competence that they care about. So it's going to tell the other side, okay, you're successful, but it's going to also tell the other side you're a warm, humble person. That's what a humble bragger thinks. But that's a wrong model.
So what actually typically happens when someone humble brags?
So when someone humble brags, if we focus only on the impressions that they make, they actually, instead of getting the best of both worlds, so instead of achieving this sweet spot of self-promotion, they actually fail on both. So perceivers or targets, recipients of this behavior, the other people whom they are talking to, they do not like them and they think they're actually not as competent. So just straightforward bragging is a much better strategy.
Because straightforward bragging, it may ding you on warmth or likability, but at least people will view it as more competent. Is that correct?
That's right. And even like the likability domain, the likability dimension, humble braggers are liked less than straightforward braggers. And the reason is because humble bragging seems so fake. It seems so insincere.
Right. At least the bragger is not pretending to be doing something else, right? There's not an extra level of deception on top.
Exactly. Right. And I think we know those people. Like sometimes somebody may brag or can be a little too confident and we can say, oh, at least they own it. You know, you own your self-promotion. You are you. And there's something refreshing about that. Whereas with humble brags, it's just so fake and so insincere.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, because there are some actions that are so objectively impressive that it feels like even with a humble brag, people have got to think the person's more competent. Like, you know, oh, I can't, you know, can't believe they gave me the Grammy, you know, what is this schmuck like me doing with a Grammy? You know what I mean? It's like, well, okay, come on, that's impressive, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we had, you're right, like the fact that, I mean, if it's a legitimate success in the eyes of everybody, that definitely gives some credibility to the person who's self-promoting. But the key there is, so we had this study where we had, let's say, high status people, people who are already successful and whose success and accomplishments are visible, they engage in humble bragging versus somebody who's not that legitimate in the eyes of others engage in humble bragging. You're right, that gives the person a little bit more credibility, but still humble bragging is not better than just bragging. So, you know, instead of saying, oh, I can't believe I won a Grammy, instead of saying that, if the same person said, I'm so happy I won a Grammy, what we found is that the latter would be better. Because again, straightforward bragging just seems more sincere, more real, more genuine. But you're right that the legitimacy of the success gives some credibility compared to if it's not even a real success, or if you don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember when you know, used to see all these people like posting about, you know, being 30 under 30 or 20 under 20 or whatever. So I checked, and it looks like about 1,000 people a year get the 30 under 30 recognition, because there's all these different categories you can get it in, and there's actually multiple countries and you can get it in. I always thought, oh, it's just 30 people get it, you know? And then it, like, you're like, huh, okay, I guess it is an accomplishment, but it's, not even the level of accomplishment that, you know, I think most people think it is. And it starts to call into question how much actual esteem people are gaining from it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the, you know, anytime those awards are announced, the award season in every career is kind of fascinating to see how people announce it. Now, you know, you can imagine I have data constantly with social media.
So let me tell you about how I tend to talk about accomplishments, because I'm pretty aversive to bragging. I try to avoid doing it, but I also tend to not like it when other people do it. And so I kind of have two strategies, because on the one hand, you could just never mention your accomplishments, but that's clearly is going to come at a cost, right? Like sometimes you need to prove your credibility to someone, or you have to show that you're competent in some way. And so you want to actually be able to mention an accomplishment, right? But you don't want to brag necessarily. Strategies. One is I will mention it, but in a very factual way that doesn't come across as me being impressed by it, if that makes sense. Like, so for example, I'll say, okay, well, you know, would it be helpful to tell you a bit about my history? And then they say yes. And I say, okay, well, here's my history. And I'll just like very factually state it. You know, kind of one thing I did and then another and another. So, you know, before I go into the second one, I want to hear your reaction to that.
So I find it fascinating that you describe it as factual. And do you mean it's like it doesn't have any emotional component?
Exactly. So for example, I did my PhD in math, right? And there's a way of talking about that that I think comes across as like seeming like you're impressed with yourself. And then there's a way of talking about that where it just feels like you're just listing a series of events in your life kind of neutrally, like, okay, so I did this and then I did my PhD in math. And then after that, I did this thing, right? And it just, I'm just trying to like not give the vibe that I am impressed by myself, basically.
Yeah. I like the intuition that you have. And I also, I'm very curious. It would be very interesting to find out whether the perceivers would also view it as you're only listing facts, which is clearly, you know, the way that you said it, it's clearly listing facts. One of the very interesting things that I find in all of the behaviors that I study, you know, humble bragging is only one of them, how the speaker's intent and the recipient's interpretation of that intent can be very different from each other. So at least in one of the nice things about the way you said your strategy was I could hear it verbally, right? So I could definitely see that you're not impressed with yourself. But imagine you were posting this as a social media post, or you were writing this. You know, would people still feel the same way or not? One of the very interesting findings that we had is that even if people only share some good news, like some positive, you know, they say some positive thing about themselves, observers, perceivers, recipients still think there's some bragging there, which is fascinating. You know, why? You know, why everything has to be a brag? It doesn't have to be. But there's definitely that gap. So I don't know how you feel about that. You know, so we need to test your strategy.
No, it's a great point because I could be misperceiving it. Maybe it comes across as being impressed with myself. I think that's what I'm aiming for is like, I think another thing that can help there is mixing together different facts, some of which are impressive and some of which are more just like standard factual. And if you kind of tell them in the same way with the same vocal intonation and emotion, then maybe it, you know, you're not kind of highlighting the things that, you know, you think are going to impress the person.
Yeah, absolutely. Mixing it could be a good strategy because there's actually research that when the recipient is cognitively busy, as they say in the paper, it just means, you know, if you're a little distracted, if there's a lot of things going on, let's say there's like so many facts you need to process, then the bragging attempt doesn't seem like a bragging attempt. So in that sense, your intuition is definitely on point. I want to say also one more thing about making it factual and not including anything that says you are impressed with yourself. There is actually fascinating research on the emotion of pride, because apparently we have two types of pride. One is authentic pride. The other is hubristic pride. Authentic pride is about, you know, I work so hard to get here. I'm genuinely so proud of myself for getting to this place. Whereas hubristic pride is all about superiority. You know, I'm great. I'm so intelligent. That's how I got here. And in a very interesting way, observers actually can distinguish between which one of these emotions are displayed. So you're right that signaling we are not very impressed with ourselves is a good strategy.
Well, one thing that helps me is I'm actually not impressed by my accomplishments, so I don't have to pretend.
Well, you're being very modest, though. I am.
No. I'm genuinely not, because I set my ambition so high that everything I've achieved in my life feels like a tiny rounding error. So I'm genuinely not impressed with my accomplishments. So. To that point about, did you call it authentic pride? Is that right?
Yes.
Can you unpack what is authentic pride actually? Like, what are you proud of in that case?
So authentic pride, again, you're not crediting your superiority for your success. You know, it's more like lack of belief in your superiority compared to others. It's more about the, again, the work that you put in, the effort that you put in. And in our studies, we find this effect as well. People are actually quite, I mean, they respond positively to these things. Like, imagine if one of us, you know, if we say something like, you know, I got this grant, I published this paper, I have this new amazing podcast, and I work so hard for this. I mean, I can imagine a lot of people would respond positively to that, because we want people who work hard to be successful. We don't have any problems with that. So that's why authentic pride is so powerful, so relatable. It's like, yes, we're cheering for you too. Yay, hard work.
Yeah, I like that. I like that approach. It's an interesting way of reframing it in terms of the effort you put in rather than something special about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to run my other strategy by you and see what you think of that, which is that, let's say I have some accomplishment that I want to tell people about, like I want to post it on social media, because I think people want to hear about it. And I think, you know, there might be some benefits of people knowing about it, et cetera, right? A strategy I've hit on here is just expressing my genuine enthusiasm and excitement about it, not kind of giving any other sort of glossing over it, if that makes sense. So saying something like, I'm really excited that I just published this piece in Scientific America, right? Like 2 weeks ago, I published a piece in Scientific America, right? You know, I could have said, I can't believe they published a schlub like me in Scientific America, right? That would be like humble bragging, right? Or I could have said, I don't even know. How do you brag? You say like, you know, they finally published me in Scientific America. I don't know, whatever a bragger says. But like my approach is just, I'm super excited. I did this thing that I, you know, that's making me, you know, happy and excited that I've done, you know? So I'm curious of your reaction to that.
Yeah, that actually, I know the answer to that very well because we tested it. And yes, that's a great strategy.
I'm glad to hear that.
Totally. Because like you said, that genuine positive emotion that you feel, it can be excitement, it can be joy, it can be happiness, it can be gratitude, you know. Those things really resonate with the recipients. When the brag is embedded in a positive emotion, people definitely respond to it more favorably than if it didn't include any emotion or compared to humble brags, as you said. And again, gratitude is also amazing. There's only one caveat, and I'm gonna say that, but I want to hear your thoughts about this first. Do you usually share with excitement? Is that what you do?
When I do publicly, I think that's what I tend towards, is just trying to express excitement about the thing that happened. When I'm doing it privately, I tend to do the other method that I mentioned of trying to just embed it in like a history or this kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's definitely the way to go. If we need to brag using positive emotions and also gratitude, I want to highlight gratitude even a little more. If we thank our teammates or our friends or our family who helped us to achieve this success, that's also leads to a very favorable impression. The only warning I would like to give to our listeners, whenever we need to announce something, the words blessed and humbled, because I think they're overly used on social media, they don't come across as genuine. So even though they may also be expressions of emotions, they are sort of, they rub people the wrong way. So we should stay away from being humbled and being blessed on social media.
Yeah, there even just something about that. I'm so blessed and humbled. Like, it just sounds like an Oscar speech that's like totally phony, right?
Right, yeah. There's something so, you know, you're so fascinated with yourself or something. There's that signal that it gives.
Could the act of answering open-ended questions about yourself give you new, important insights? It turns out the answer is yes, if those questions are selected in just the right way. After running a series of 5 scientific studies, Clearer Thinking has discovered a specific set of practical, yet rarely asked questions that 83% of people reported were valuable for them to answer, and 78% said they would recommend to others. A remarkably high 88% of people even reported that they enjoyed answering these questions. And Clearer Thinking is now making those questions available to you for free on clearerthinking.org so that you can benefit from them as well. You can also order a beautiful physical card deck of the life-changing questions so that you can use the questions to bond with friends and family. We think you'll be surprised just how valuable answering these open-ended questions about yourself can be. To answer the free life-changing questions or to find Clearer Thinking's other free tools and mini courses, head to clearerthinking.org.
Can I give you some examples from the internet of people, of like mainly celebrities, bragging and get your kind of analysis and breakdown of them?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so here's one. It always feels a little odd to me when I get recognized randomly in public. I never know what to say. I'm glad it doesn't happen often.
So first of all, I would like to say this is the first time I'm doing a very direct analysis of celebrity remarks, and it's so fascinating. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Well, you know, if the whole academic thing doesn't work out, this is a new line of work for you.
So fun. Well, I must say, I don't know who this person was, but there are certain things that I can identify based on our research and our great research by others, how there are some wrong strategies there. First of all, finding being recognized odd is a perfect example of humble brag. Right? It's, oh, it's so odd. How come this is happening? And there's that feeling of, it definitely generates some insincerity there. Because if this person is really famous, they should already get used to this. If they're not really famous, then maybe they're not that recognized often. So it's not, it doesn't seem super real there. I think at some point they also say, I hope it doesn't happen often, or something like that.
I never know what to say. I'm glad it doesn't happen often.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad it doesn't happen often. That also seems very... So there's a complaint there. I mean, the fact that it happens is an inconvenient or an annoying event for this person. So there's the complaint there. There is definitely this air of arrogance there. I don't know if you would agree with me. And that's all because of that humble bragging there.
Okay, here's a hilarious one for you. I'd be the worst at Price is Right. Brought $20,000 to buy a monitor. It was $350. And then they reference someone else and say, this person can vouch for how clueless I am with prices.
This person is bragging about their money wealth. Is that...
Yeah, they're so wealthy that they bring $20,000 to... Also, who brings money to buy a monitor? Do you have a credit card? Do you bring suitcases of cash?
Well, very, 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 very wrong attempt to signal anything. Like, it doesn't even... You know, it's also funny, though, I remember when we collected all these humble brags, both from publicly available social media posts, or we also ran lots of surveys with different segments from the society. and we asked them, do you recall any humble brag, let's say, from your workplace? There were actually a lot of ones that are about wealth or money. I remember one of the examples that one of our participants gave was somebody said, oh, my house is so big, Wi-Fi doesn't reach. Something like that.
How annoying.
Really so annoying. And the other thing is, like, the person, let's say, who posts this, who says this, what do they gain? You know, I always think about that. Like, why did they need to say this? Like, it's a very unsolicited humble brag, right, about, oh, I'm so rich, I don't even know the price. It's fascinating.
Right, because at least if some big event happens in your life, right, like if someone wins an award or publishes an article, at least there's like, oh, okay, it makes sense that they're talking about this now, as opposed to just being wealthy. What made you think that this was just a good time to comment on your wealth, right?
Yeah, right. And I think with that, like, I always think about the motivations behind these behaviors. Like, why do we even engage in these behaviors? And of course, again, the main topic of my focus, my research stream, is impression mismanagement, I call it, because I focus on the mistakes. But I also would like to say an impression is never just about just the impression. It's about many things. I can see, for instance, one reason why we say these things, why engage in these strategies, is definitely about our emotional regulation. So there is this wonderful paper by a wonderful scholar, Scopelliti, and her co-authors, who focused on when people brag, there's actually a very miscalibrated reaction going on, because people actually feel good when they brag about themselves, but the other side doesn't feel good. Like, the recipient feels negative. So there's this positive emotion, negative emotion gap. But these examples just tells me, even if there is no impression management benefit, people may be engaging in these strategies because they just feel good. You know, it feels great to say something great about yourself.
And usually people don't criticize you, right? Like, if you brag in front of someone, it's unlikely that they're in the moment going to, like, chastise you or something, right? So you feel good, and that creates, like, a reward loop, right? You get, you know, you feel like you've accomplished something. And, you know, if you post on social media, probably some of your friends will be like, congratulations or whatever. And the people who think you're a jerk are just probably not going to say anything. You know, maybe one or two of them will, but usually people don't post that kind of thing.
Exactly. There is this incredible lack of social feedback. It's a perpetuating loop. It's so hard to call people out on their humble brags or interesting, arrogant statements. We can never do that. Even the eye roll would happen after the moment has passed.
I sometimes think about what social media would be like if there was a dislike button as well as a like button, and how incredibly different it would be, because people would be much more attuned to, am I going to get a negative reaction to the thing I'm posting? Whereas today, okay, sometimes you get, you know, crickets, nobody responds, and that's sort of negative feedback, but you can kind of be like, well, maybe nobody saw it or whatever. But if you had, like, you know, 2/3 of people disliking the thing you posted, that would be real reinforcement of, yeah, don't do this behavior.
Yeah, right. It's fascinating, like, how it would, maybe that would be the intervention to make social media a little less braggy. I totally agree. Yeah.
An anonymous dislike button, right? It can't be a link to the person who did it. Otherwise, people probably wouldn't engage in it very much. Or maybe you only get one dislike, you know, every week. So you have to use them sparingly. You have to really dislike something. Okay, I want to do one more brag. I think this one's hilarious. I want to get your analysis of it. I just did something very selfless. But more importantly, it was genuine. And I know it means a lot to the person in the long run. And then they used hashtag so worth it.
I'm sorry. This is just like a fascinating masterpiece of because there's so many.
I know. Is this like performance art, or is this a humble brag?
So, and what I like about, like, you chose such great examples. What I like about these examples is that they reflect our common misguided intuitions, but we can also see the internal conflict in the person, right? There is this paradox. Oh, I should say it. It's worth it, but it feels genuine. Like, there's like, even in that very calculated, very polished post that they share, I can almost hear the internal dilemma this person is feeling regarding should they say it or not.
Yeah, she's like, which hashtag should I put on this? Okay, so worth it. That's the right one.
It's called actually self-promotion paradox in the literature, because it is such a paradox. Should I do it? Should I not do it? But if I do it, and also another thing I'd like to say about this is I guess they've done some maybe pro-social behavior or something like that.
Right. They said, I just did something very selfless, but more importantly, it was genuine.
Yeah. So, you know, bragging about ourselves is one thing. The other category of bragging could be, you know, bragging about our good deeds to others, our pro-social behavior. That's even more interesting. There's actually research on this. And the research says that if we don't know what the good deed is, bragging does not help. So this person not only showed this dilemma and paradox that they're going through, but they also, we don't even know what the good deed is. And we don't know. I mean, because there's a way to interpret this as a pure motive for doing good deeds. But the moment you talk about them, then the pure motive is questionable, right? Did you do this good thing because you wanted to brag about it or not? So it's also, the paradox becomes even stronger when we talk about our virtues.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that they signal that they're not aware of the research literature on humble bragging.
Yeah, it seems like they're not.
Okay, so we've talked about the problems with humble bragging. You say maybe bragging actually works better than humble bragging, but a lot of people don't like bragging, and that can leave a bad impression as well, and it can make people think we're less likable and less warm. So another strategy is we just kind of hide our successes. So is that what we should do?
I would say no to that as well. I know I'm giving a lot of no's today in terms of which strategies work. It is because when somebody hides their success, that also may rub people the wrong way because of other reasons, not because of insincerity this time. But it's because... So imagine you know somebody at work gets the promotion, but a lot of people expect that. Or imagine, I'm sure we all had that friend, or maybe we were that friend who gets a good grade on an exam, but then our friend maybe doesn't have the same grade. They have like a lower points or something like that. And do we actually share our success with them or not? When we ask about this, a lot of people said, and we ran these studies in parks and in actual people on the street, people said, no, I won't. There has been times where I have hidden my success. I have hid my success because I don't want to make the other side feel envious. Let's say if you are making more than your sibling, or if you're getting pregnant, even your friends are having problems with that. You know, would you share it or not? And a lot of people have this intuition of, no, I just want to hide it. I just don't want to make anybody upset or envious or jealous. And we looked at this phenomenon of hiding success, and we found that there are so many relationship consequences of this behavior. People actually think, oh, you think I'm going to be jealous? You think I'm going to be envious? That's so offensive. So people don't feel close to you anymore if you hide success. So not saying anything and hiding good things is also comes with great relationship costs.
Yeah, it's, relatedly, I've seen cases where people were upset because they're like, this important thing happened to you and you didn't tell me about it. Like, I wanted to congratulate you and celebrate with you. And so it can make friends feel left out.
Right? Yeah. How come you don't share this with me? How come you think I'm not going to be on your team to celebrate with you? And and also there's something super offensive about this feeling of, oh, they thought I would be jealous because of their success. They thought I wouldn't join them in their happiness and celebration. There's something so offensive about it. How dare you control or you try to manage and regulate my emotions, you know? That's so offensive. That's so condescending to people.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I would also just add that there's nothing wrong with people thinking you're competent because you did something cool that shows competence, right? Like, why not share that with people as long as you can do it in a way that doesn't rub them the wrong way and doesn't leave a negative impression? Okay, so we've talked about a lot of things that you shouldn't do. Suppose someone wants to show their competence while leaving a good impression and not being less likable or come across as less warm. So what are some pointers or steps they can take?
Yeah, so one of the strategies that we highlighted was, again, saying it with positive emotions and excitement and joy and happiness. These are helpful emotions to include. The other thing that's, I think, the most powerful bragging strategy that exists since the beginning of time is really having someone else do it for you, that intermediary wingman of bragging.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I think startup founders can do this very successfully, where they'll go into, two founders will go into a room, the pitching investors or whatever, and then each one of them talks about how awesome the other one of them is, but in a way that's ideally very genuine, like why they think that person's awesome and amazing things that person did. And it just sounds like supportive and not like bragging because it's towards another person, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely a very, very powerful strategy because, again, only, I mean, when someone does it for you, then you don't seem like you have this ulterior motive. You don't seem very strategic at all. And they still remember the good information about you. In our very recent work, we look at introductions, how people introduce themselves to others. I think it's very important for, as you said, maybe startups, entrepreneurs, or any of us who's in networking events. And people who can actually give information, even in a limited time, about the process of their journey rather than just the outcome. What I mean by that is rather than just saying the success, if you can say something about your story, your process of how you get there, that's definitely memorable and much more effective than just listing the bragging attempt.
Right. So in that case, it would be like, you start by telling the story of like how you started working towards this thing, you know, 10 years ago and all the different steps you took to get there. And then you kind of end with like, and now I've achieved my big goal. Is that the kind of idea of how to embed it?
Or, you know, I think for some of us, the process is even invisible. I mean, to us, it is visible, of course, because we know that information. But to others, it's not. Like one example could be, for instance, you know, this is my 16th year in the United States. I've been living in the United States for 16 years now. I teach. I love school. I'm in academia. I'm operating in my second language. And this is something that nobody even, I mean, they recognize it, of course, because of my probably accent. You definitely hear my accent. But still, it's not something that occurs to people that I started learning English literally at the age of 15, which is not so early. And it's fascinating, you know, when I say that and share that, even my very close friends will be like, oh, I did not know that, you know, you started that late to learn this language. Even something like that, it can seem mundane. It can seem very regular to us, just like some information about the process. And again, it can make the story more memorable. It can also show the effort that you put in. And it's definitely better at making more favorable impression than just listing where you are right now, what you do right now. Something for networking strategy, for sure.
So what's a really big accomplishment you've had in the last few years?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
To brag about it and see how you do it. I'm going to put you on the spot.
If I start, like, I'm glad you asked. I don't know. I actually didn't think about the biggest accomplishment 2 years. That's such a fascinating question. I need to think about this. I would say the thing that I'm very proud of is I feel very grateful that I get to do what I love with the people I love because there is really amazing teamwork. I'm not just saying this just because.
Oh, come on. That's like the worst brag. You just...
It's really true, though, because like all of the scholarly work, you know this too. It's just like there's just so much work going into it from the idea development to actual execution of studies and then writing and publishing and sharing it. It's just like crazy level of coordination, cooperation, collaboration. So I am really proud of that.
Okay, so we know you're a really nice and humble person, right? We know that that's true, but... Suppose that you just had a great accomplishment, right? Like, let's say you publish in like the top journal in your field, like the journal everyone wants to publish in. It's almost impossible to get published, right? And you want to communicate this to people, right? Because, you know, you want them to know that you had this accomplishment and it makes you look good and it shows you're competent and, you know, it's important for your career and et cetera. Can you give us an example? How would you talk about this? Like, and maybe in a couple contexts. And maybe one is like you're talking to coworkers and maybe another is like you're posting online or something.
I would say, I mean, if it's like broader audience of like online and there's like a general public, I definitely think that it should say something about the content of the paper as well. You know, why this is relevant and important or interesting. So, and which is something that I see a lot, which I really appreciate. Like, I really love it when authors share their papers and work and explain it with a couple sentences. That's one thing.
So would you just sort of very neutrally, let's say, yeah, I just published this paper in such and such journal on this topic, and here's some interesting things we found. You
know, I would definitely start with the actual excitement, or maybe you feel joy, maybe you're thrilled. I don't know, but like whatever you're feeling, you know, you may feel proud too. That's perfectly fine too. You know, I'm so proud of this paper that finally came out. Like, I would definitely combine it with a positive emotion. Number one, I think because it's genuine. Like, I definitely do feel very good positive emotions when that happens. Number two, I think it makes it relatable. Usually something that I do, and I think it's because of our process paper that we're working on, I would like to give some background context about how much work it took, how many people it involved, what kind of life stages a paper has seen. You know, sometimes papers see birth of children or graduations or starting a new job because it takes so long to publish a paper. So I would do that, not just from my perspective, but from the team's perspective. And I would also publicly recognize, even if I'm just talking to a colleague in a hallway rather than just social media, I would also publicly recognize co-authors and collaborators. And I think if you can make it a conversation, make people engage in a conversation of what's this paper about? Whom did you work with? What's the next step? I think that's exactly the effective brag. Then the information is there, you give the information, and you're engaging with them.
Well, you touched on another strategy, which we hadn't talked about, which is giving credit to other people, right? Like saying, you know, I couldn't have done this without my team, or I want to thank so-and-so.
Yes, exactly. That's also a very, very important strategy for lots of things. Like, number one, of course, as an impression management strategy, it's very effective if you recognize your teammates. I think number two, it's important for the team as well. Again, it's very rare to have very individualistic success. In science, I can definitely say that. But in art, in other domains, in startups, we said, like one of the other things we talked about so far, like everything requires some sort of a team effort. So it's great to recognize the people who contributed so that they also would like to collaborate with you again. Right, we don't also want to annoy them. So sharing credit, it can be hard at the moment, but sharing credit is an incredibly effective social lubricant that we all need. So we want that as well.
If you're feeling stressed or anxious and need to calm down quickly, you should try MindEase. MindEase is a free app for iOS, Android, and the web that uses scientifically proven exercises to help you relieve stress and anxiety in under 10 minutes. MindEase works with your specific situation and thought patterns. The exercises are interactive and engage you actively. You'll be writing, reflecting, making choices, reading, listening, and performing actions that are all designed to move you to a calmer state of mind. Since no two people experience anxiety the same way, why should we expect any single way of calming down to suit everybody? MindEase offers a range of evidence-based techniques for managing stress and anxiety. And sometimes it's tricky to tell how much better something has made you feel. So MindEase makes that simpler by measuring your state of mind before and after each exercise so that you can see exactly how well it worked. The app's insights page makes it easy to see what works for you and what doesn't. When you're feeling curious and eager to learn, the app's explore page has a wealth of tools aimed at helping you grow and understand yourself better. To find more info and to get the free MindEase app, go to mindease.io. That's MindEase.io.
So one topic I think is quite interesting is this idea of counter-signaling, where basically people might expect you to signal something. Like, for example, they might, you know, think, oh, a wealthy person is going to wear expensive clothes or something like this, right? And then to counter signal, you essentially violate the expectation in a way that can actually indicate even more of that positive attribute because it shows a sort of indifference towards the signaling. So, you know, example would be if a really wealthy person, everyone knows is really wealthy, shows up in like sweatpants looking totally disheveled, people are like, oh, that person's so high status that they don't even care about coming across as being well put together. So it's sort of this polarizing thing where like a super low status person might come to a meeting really disheveled, but also a super high status person who is just not going to be affected by the fact that they look bad.
Yeah, I like how you said it's counter signaling. So true. Because it's almost like we infer, in some cases, right, we infer status and competence from nonconformity. Not always, not every time, but sometimes. And there is actually a fascinating paper on this, like on the exact phenomenon. They call it red sneaker effect, Because imagine there is this event that everyone goes with like suits or with more like business casual outfit or something. And this very well-known, rich, highly intelligent, high status person shows up with red sneakers or turtleneck. You know, we have seen that with Steve Jobs, or we see like a lot of head of the companies show up with not so dressed up. What they've shown is that it can actually signal power and status as long as it's viewed as intentional, though. If it's an unintentional violation of a normative code, it leads to social disapproval. But if this counter signaling, if we think that they're actually doing it on purpose, then it definitely looks better. It looks like more higher status, higher power, higher competence. It's a fascinating phenomenon.
Because it's basically like they don't need the status, so they're purposely not bothering to collect it. Is that the idea? And that shows just how high status they are?
Yes, exactly. It really depends on where they are in the hierarchy, because when they do it, if they do it, we know that, oh, they don't even need to care about this anymore. That's why they can do it. So it even seems more cooler than if they follow the norms, right? Just so fascinating to me. I'm not at the point to counter signal anything in my life yet. I always do show up with a jacket then. But fascinating phenomenon.
I remember when I was young and I was doing my first ever meetings with investors, I just was clueless. And so I would wear clothes that were not necessarily appropriate for the meeting. And they were baffled by it. But I think they were not sure whether it was counter signaling or me just being naive. And it was definitely the latter. So.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I guess, you know, this also shows how these impressions, the status, power, respect, all of these are in the eyes of the beholder, right? Like even in professional settings, dressing unconventionally can be perceived as having higher status and possessing more competence. So interesting to me still.
It reminds me of cases where animals will do things that seem counterintuitive to their survival. Like, for example, a deer that when there's a predator nearby will like leap up into the air and become really visible. And you might think, well, that's crazy because the deer is drawing attention to itself, right? But it's like actually sort of signaling to the predator, I am so strong, I don't give a shit if you see me. And look at how high I can leap, right? And then it's sort of a paradoxical strategy that's like the predator's like, oh, maybe I should go after a different deer because this one looks like it's going to be tough to get.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it reminds me, there is also such a great point. And there's this, it just reminded me of this other new paper that came out very recently. It is about the use of jargon in the workplace. Or, you know, you are doing this fantastic podcast. I'm sure you have so many experts and probably you have seen firsthand how some people use more jargon than others. And what they find in this paper is that the use of jargon is also related to this status signaling. People who use jargon want to look more competent and more signal their expertise more, but it backfires again. another backfiring strategy. I know you asked me about what works and I keep listing the things that don't work, but...
Well, it's a, you know, kind of a useful advice still. If you avoid these things, you can do a better job. But so you're saying, I feel like this comes up a lot in like when someone's asked to write an essay or something like this, and they'll start using all these words that they would never use in normal life that make it seem kind of sophisticated. One fun example, I think, is the word utilize, because almost always when you say the word utilize, you could just use the word use. And yet it's sort of like a more sophisticated sounding version. And I started having a negative association with it. I probably use it sometimes. I probably utilize it sometimes without realizing it. But I started to get a negative association with it because I started thinking it's just sort of a way of sounding sophisticated, but you're actually just saying use anyway.
Yeah, it's like the use of complex language doesn't help. It actually makes it harder to digest. But anytime I use utilize now, I'm going to think of you, Spencer.
Good, yeah. All right, before we wrap up, I want to switch to sort of a broader topic, which is just beyond bragging and humble bragging, all this stuff. What can we do to get people to respect us more?
Yeah, such a great question, because I think we even have misperceptions about what works or how should we do it. The way that I think about impression mismanagement is that the almost the opposite end of it is, to me, it's kindness. And I find it fascinating how kindness, at least people think that it can be taken as a weakness. And I don't know why there is this belief out there. You know, I kind of want to get into maybe even cynicism literature, the fact that this belief, everything comes down to self-interest. What we find is that these shortcuts, like a lot of things that I talked about, right? You try to mask your bragging with a complaint and make it humble, or you use a jargon, or you try to hide success. Like a lot of these things are like shortcuts. But what makes us respect-worthy is it should be a very long-term game. That's why I think kindness is the way to go. That's why it's like consistent acts of giving credit, consistent acts of, and being a little more patient in terms of signaling our humility and the respect worthiness, you know. So I know this sounded too abstract. I couldn't give any one strategy yet, but that's exactly the point. There is no one verbal strategy to get people's respect.
It's the idea that by consistently showing virtues, that's really the best way to earn respect over time, rather than kind of running strategies to try to get people to respect you.
Yeah, right. These shortcuts don't really work. It's like we have to be consistently. And when I say, you know, we don't need to talk about our virtues all the time either. But it's again, you know, having a kind request if you have people who are working with you, who are looking up to you, saying thank you. Like, thank you goes a long way. There's research on that. You know, just saying thank you can motivate people way more than giving the same task but not ending it with thank you. Or recognizing other people, having these recognition rituals almost, or giving them credit verbally when you announce and not taking the stage. Doing these things consistently definitely makes someone more respect-worthy. That's why it's like a more long-term strategy and these other shortcuts wouldn't work. And the other reason why it's not a verbal thing, it shouldn't be a shortcut. It's like ironic that if I want to signal I'm so respectable but also humble, like the moment I say humble, I'm humble. I'm not humble, right? I can't say I'm the most humble person ever. that just doesn't make any sense. So it shouldn't be just this verbal one thing. Somehow celebration, recognition rituals for you and for your teammates, having this as a long-term game, recognizing others, thanking others. These are the things that we should do. And that's why kindness should not be taken as a weakness, because it's not. It should rather be like this long-term strategy, both to signal how respect-worthy you are, but also to cultivate a great culture. Like, we don't want to be in a place where people just brag arrogantly or where people hide their successes and accomplishments all the time because they don't feel safe to share. We want to cultivate a safe environment.
One of the things I'm taking away from what you're saying is that if you want people to view you as X, one of the most effective ways to do that is just focus on being X, right? And if you just focus on being X, people will, you know, maybe they're not going to get it the moment they meet you, but over time, people will realize that's the sort of person you are. And that's like, that's also the authentic way to signal something, is just to really embody it.
Exactly. I love it. You said it so well. It's really about being that rather than telling people, hey, I am that, right? It's just being that and waiting. And eventually people would recognize, of course, people, if it's again, persistent and continuing, of course, people would recognize.
It's like that famous rule in writing, show, don't tell, right? Like, don't tell the reader, well, this happened, then that happened, then that happened. Like, paint the picture, give them the scene, right? It's actually show them what happened. Like, just be that person rather than telling them that you're that person.
Exactly. Just show, don't tell. I love that strategy. Maybe that's probably the best impression management advice out there.
Well, going back to the kind of two axis system you mentioned before of like competence, or I've sometimes heard it referred to as like power versus warmth, which is also related to likability, right? So it's competence versus warmth. We could think about these as quadrants, right? If we think of a two axis system, you've got the like competent and warm, incompetent and warm, competent and cold, and incompetent and cold, right? And when people are trying to do impression management, sometimes they're just doing it sloppily, like they're doing humble bragging, and they're actually moving backwards in both quadrants, right? They're coming across as less competent and less warm, right? So that's just totally counterproductive, right? Sometimes people are doing it somewhat more competently, but they're just doing, they're trading one thing off for another, right? So maybe they're bragging, and that is making them come across as more competent, but they're coming across as less warm or less likable, right? So they're getting an advantage in one way, but then they're getting a disadvantage in a second way, right? And there's just a trade-off there. But then the question is, you know, how do you actually move in both, you know, in both warmth and competence simultaneously? And that's sort of what we're talking about here, which is like, if you show the trait genuinely and you embody it, then, well, they're going to both think you're competent and they're going to like you simultaneously, right? Does that seem like a way to encapsulate what, like sort of the different strategies?
Exactly. And like you said, you know, humble bragging, people think it's going to get the best of both worlds and get both warmth and competence and put us in the upper right quadrant if we describe it visually. But instead, it actually backfires and it's actually worse in both dimensions. And getting to both is really about your great strategy, the way you said it, show, don't tell. For instance, humor could be a great strategy to signal both your intelligence and how likable you are, but you have to do it. You have to be funny. You cannot just say, I'm so funny. That just doesn't work. You know, I can't imagine someone in a stand-up show saying, hey, I'm so funny. Thanks so much for coming. That just would be the shortest stand-up show ever. So strategies that are in the show, don't tell category, if they are done successfully, would actually get us the best of both worlds.
I think it's interesting to think about narcissists with regard to these dimensions, because in my experience, like really extremely narcissistic people, they tend to brag a great deal. And what ends up happening is some segment of the population is like sucked in by it and is like, wow, they're so amazing. How do I know? Because they tell me they're so amazing, you know, so they kind of believe them and get sucked in. Now, I do think that they take a hit in warmth, but it's sort of like they still sometimes are able to thrive this way because they have enough people, you know. It's like, imagine that they tell 100 people that they're amazing and brag about all their accomplishments. Like maybe 50 of the people find them really annoying and are put off by it. But then maybe 20 of those people are like super impressed and are like, wow, this person's amazing. You know, I want to be around them all the time. So I'm curious if you have any like thoughts on that and how that kind of interacts with narcissism.
Yeah, this is a great question. I haven't done any research that connects the narcissism to these behaviors. It would be a fascinating area to explore because, as you said, the narcissists, they would love to have their grandiosity and they love bragging. They love the attention. And do they actually have any net gain out of this? Because, like you said, some people may take it at a face value. It's interesting. It could be that way, but it could also be like anytime they need to build something long term, maybe it's not also working for them though, right? Like for short span of attention, maybe getting likes or, you know, social media attention, maybe you're right that because narcissism and these behaviors would probably be correlated. Again, we haven't tested that yet. There may be some benefits that they're gaining, especially with the attention that they get. But because anything that's super meaningful in life requires a more long-term approach, as we said before, regarding this building a respect-worthy reputation for yourself, probably at some point they lose that fan base. That would be, or maybe I'm just an optimistic person in general that I would like to think that nice people finish first rather than narcissists.
Well, you know, it's just an interesting question. I think nice people finish first in some ways and narcissists finish first in other ways. So my experience with this is that if a narcissist is really incompetent, I think it's hard for them to play this off properly, right? Because like people kind of like, this person's, you know, they're full of shit, right? But if a narcissist is actually quite competent and like has actual real accomplishments, I think what ends up happening through extreme bragging, they end up creating a self-selected group, right? So like, yes, they put off a lot of people, but in the modern world where we don't live in like a small tribe of 100 people, even if you piss off half the people you meet, actually, you could still end up with like a lot of admirers and then you hang out with them, right? And then you kind of build a network around that. And so that's kind of what I've seen happen is that they will isolate a lot of people, but that doesn't sort of matter because in this world, there's just sort of endless people to associate with.
Yeah. And you know, it also reminds me, I know this is like slightly a different topic, but I think it's so related about this whole environment, because once you said we don't live in a small community of 100 people anymore, that's so true. And I think if this happens, which is likely, you know, I agree with your intuition there. I don't have any data on this, but it may be true. And if that happens, maybe that's one of the reasons why bragging or self-promotion also becomes a norm. Why do we use social media for these things right now? This is a fascinating question to me. You know, I this was just so random, but like literally a couple months ago, I went back to my Twitter account, like one of the very old ones that I had. I looked at the first tweet I shared and I wrote something like, I like to cook, right? Now it's like a whole different thing. And I wonder if we see that it's working for some people. That's why everyone engages in these behaviors. It's also connected to this idea of there's no social feedback. There's the lack of negative feedback. And the fact that we see some people get away with it makes it a norm. So we live in this world of, there's almost a race of self-promotion right now. You know, I find it fascinating. We live in a world where everyone is famous, but we don't know anybody. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's really interesting how with social media, people have a sort of celebrity-like status, even if it's only to their 100 Twitter followers or whatever, right? I mean, it's not that they're worshipped, but it's that they're putting forward a face. They're putting forward a public image, right? Whereas maybe that didn't exist so much before social media.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And some part of it may be related to these narcissism phenomenon. People who are narcissists may be getting away with it, and that sets some example for some people, for sure.
This idea of showing rather than telling that we were talking about before, it makes me think about another concept that's related, which is this idea of unfakeable signals. Like, let's say you really want to prove that you're a certain way, right? Maybe it benefits you to prove that. There are certain things you can do that just absolutely definitively prove it in a way that can't be faked. And so as an example, someone could post on social media all day about what a great artist they are, or they could just paint a really beautiful painting and just post a picture of it on social media. Like, hey, I just finished this painting. And like, there's a sense in which the second is so much more powerful because anyone can say they're a great artist, right? But only a great artist can actually paint a great painting, or, you know, within reason, maybe people can get luckier or whatever, but...
Yeah. It's like, it's just like incredible, way more powerful for everything. Like any work of art, scientific discovery, any activity that we like to do, that's like way more powerful than trying to convince people how great we are. But I wonder if we recognize this too. Like for some reason, we see a lot of telling, right? We don't see much of the showing. I mean, sometimes we do, but not too much.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to consider how we can show more rather than tell. Like one example of this I found is sometimes people will ask me for my advice on something and I want to make a good impression on this person. Like the relationship is important to me. Maybe it's someone I just met, but I'm like, oh, I really want to get to know this person better. And so what I can do is instead of just giving advice, which like anyone can just say a bunch of words, right? I'll actually go and do a thing for them. Like, let's say they're like, oh, I don't know where to find a list of such and such. I'll just go track it down and be like, oh, here, I found this for you. And I feel like that kind of thing, it's very powerful to just do a thing for a person in a way where they're like, oh, wow, this person, like, they clearly invested 20 minutes of their time to go get this thing for me. Even though it's a small sacrifice, they made a sacrifice. And it's a certain unfakeable signal of like caring about that relationship, right? Because they made the sacrifice. In a way that, you know, you could talk endlessly about how much you care about someone, but if you don't actually make the sacrifice, well, how do they know, right?
Yeah, like it's... And also by engaging in the act and showing, we also show our sincerity and genuineness about it, which I find it's incredibly important in any behavior we study. The fact that whether it seems sincere and genuine or not can really make or break the relationship, or can really make or break the attempt. It's so important. It's another dimension that we care about a lot in our interactions, which makes sense. Like, we really like real, genuine, sincere people. And this showing of the acts, engaging in the things, also show how we are invested in it, how we really care, how we genuinely care about the thing.
Avul, thank you so much for coming on. This was really fun.
Thank you so much, Spencer.
Thanks again for listening. We always love to hear from our listeners, so if you have questions or comments for us, just send us an email at clearerthinkingpodcast@gmail.com. This episode was edited by Ryan Kessler and transcribed by Janessa Baril. Uri Bram is the podcast's factotum. To find show notes, transcripts, and more info about the show, visit clearerthinkingpodcast.com. And if you like the show, we'd really appreciate it if you could rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends about us on social media. We also hope you'll subscribe to our email newsletter called One Helpful Idea. Each week, we'll send you one idea that we think is really valuable that you can read about in just 30 seconds, along with that week's new podcast episodes, an essay by Spencer, and announcements about upcoming events. You can sign up for that newsletter on our website, clearerthinkingpodcast.com.